What's great about talking about this topic to college students is I don't have to like give any of an introduction for why we're talking about this. Some topics are like, okay, here's why you should care. I don't have to do that. We just get right into it. So let's get right into it. I have, of course, lots I hope to say in this time, and whatever I don't get to, I have some resources I can point you to at the end. So we'll kind of see how we do for time today. So not counting staff, how many of you remember or have heard of the name Josh Harris or Joshua Harris and the book I Kissed Dating Goodbye? Okay, so a few of you, even all these years later. I might stand up if that's not weird. I think that book came out 96 or 97. So I was kind of preteen, 13 years old. My mom had subscribed me to Breakaway magazine. Is that still a thing? Did anyone here get Breakaway magazine or Brio magazine for girls? Okay, yeah, yes, there's the look there. So, and is this like Focus on the Family's magazine for teen boys and girls? And when you're like old enough to get to move up from Clubhouse magazine, anyone get Clubhouse? Okay, so when you move from Clubhouse to Breakaway, it was like, today is the day I became a man. And one of the reasons you knew that is because in Breakaway magazine, they did articles about dating and stuff like that. And so they were one of the first ones to kind of platform Josh Harris, and he wrote this book called I Kissed Dating Goodbye. The dominant model up till that point had been casual dating. That was the dominant model in among just the broader culture and among Christians who had largely adopted it. And the idea was that you just dated people, and that's just what you did. Dating was what young people did when you liked each other. And however long it went for, and however physically involved you got with each other, and whatever the goal was, were not really things that you thought about. Eventually, you would think that if you dated a really great person for long enough, eventually you start to think, well, maybe we should think about getting married. But the idea of casual dating, being just dating for the sake of dating, was the dominant model at that time. And Josh Harris came along and he said, no, that's a terrible model. Here's all the reasons why it's a bad model. We need to kiss dating goodbye, as the title of his book was. And his point was that God's plan for relationships between men and women is marriage. And so if you're going to do anything prior to marriage, it's to figure out if you should get married or not. And so just dating for the sake of dating is a stupid idea. He said it a little bit nicer than that. But the goal is marriage. And what's been interesting to watch in the years since then is how this idea has really taken root. So when I first started teaching on dating and teaching people about this, it was still something I had to kind of work to convince people about, and I don't really have to anymore. It's and I don't know if some of you might disagree with me on that. I'd be interested to hear that. But by and large, it seems to be the case that Christian young people today, on average, want to get married. And they assume that if you're going to date someone, it's for the purpose of getting married. That seems to be an assumption that a lot of people held. So Josh Harris kind of won the date. Now, he himself has lost some pretty big things since then, such as his faith, and it's very sad. But lots has changed. Here's some of the things that have not changed, though. What has not changed is a lot of the ways that young people, whether Christian or non-Christian, are approaching and dealing with one another. All of the same, or many of the same dynamics still seem to be in place. I was listening to some conversations in the last few days. Someone telling me about a conversation they'd had with a young person, 18, 19, not a Christian, no Christian background as far as I know at all, and their conversation about their relationship and how it started and how, well, you know, he liked my post and I thought that must mean something, and so I liked one of his posts, and sort of the online flirting thing and where it all went. And then almost an identical conversation, identical kinds of things hearing from a Christian young couple. And the dynamics are very much the same. The only difference is that the non-Christian couple, they're looking for a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and the Christian couple is looking for a husband or a wife. But other than that, a lot of the dynamics of how the relationships are working and unfolding seem to be very, very similar. Can anyone relate? Do you think I'm on the right track there? Do you think that I might be onto something there, or do you want to push back and argue with me? This is interactive. This isn't a sermon, so you can push back, you can ask questions, you can put up your hands. Do you think we might be onto something there? Though the goals are different, a lot of the dynamics of how young men and women are relating to each other before they become a thing, whether they're Christians or not Christians, a lot of the dynamics are the same. Any thoughts on that? Before I keep going. Okay, so I'm gonna keep moving on here. There are, of course, exceptions to what I'm talking about. Okay, so what I'm not talking about is hookup culture, for example, in certain environments where the goal is not to find a boyfriend or a girlfriend, but just to hook up for the night. Okay, so I'm not talking about hookup culture. I'm not talking about some of those things, but What is common here between the unbelieving couple flirting with each other to try to figure out if they're going to become boyfriend and girlfriend, and the Christian couple flirting with each other to figure out if they're going to be husband and wife, which you have to, I guess, be boyfriend and girlfriend first, but let's get that over with as soon as possible, is a worldly view of relationships. No, guys, you laugh, but like you guys know this, right? So like it's not uncommon to have Christian couples plan when they're going to get engaged before they've even started dating. Like, that is not a strange thing. It should be. That's very strange, but unfortunately it's not. Let's get married yesterday is sadly a very, very, very common thing. Here's what unites these two perspectives. It is a worldly view of relationships that I call worldly because it asserts that your value as a person is based on whether or not someone else is romantically interested in you. So the unbelieving couple hunting for a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a one-night stand, and the Christian young person who's, you know, scanning their social media feed to see if that one special person liked their post with anxiety and tension and all of that, What may be the same between the two of them is an unbiblical view of relationships that asserts or holds that my value as a person depends on whether or not another human is romantically interested in me or not. That is, you may not have heard the words put to that, but my guess is that a lot of you, and I could say us, because I still very much remember what all of this was like, it is pretty familiar. That you are desperate for, if you're a girl for a guy, or if you're a guy for a girl, you are desperate for someone to show you interest romantically, because the world has taught you that that's where your value and worth as a person comes from. Every song on the radio has taught you that shows my age, you know, every song on Spotify shows you that that's where your value and worth as a person comes from. Every happy ending in every romantic movie has shown you that that's when life starts, is when you find the person and you lock eyes and you have the magical moment and they're into you and you're into them. That's what it's all about. And until then, you're not really living and you're not really valuable. And so I want to challenge that assumption by just reminding us of the fact that our value as people does not depend on whether or not another human is romantically interested in us, but whether our Creator is eternally committed to us, which He is. He is. Your Creator is eternally committed to you. And your, as we sing in that song, your value was fixed where your ransom was paid, which is where? How's the song go? You guys, maybe you don't sing that here. At the cross, right? Your value is fixed, your ransom was paid at the cross. Understanding that your value is based on your Heavenly Father's assessment of you, not the person you like's assessment of you. It changes a lot. It really, really changes a lot. What's missing from this worldly view is a biblical view of marriage and of singleness. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I really encourage you to read 1 Corinthians chapter 7. It's one of those chapters in the Bible that a lot of people don't like, they ignore, they skip over. It's not very common because it challenges a lot of our assumptions. According to 1 Corinthians 7, marriage is not the default for the people of God in the new covenant. This is an idea. I've heard good Christian teachers teach adulthood equals marriage, and that was the case in the old covenant. But in the new covenant, inaugurated by the death and resurrection of Jesus, marriage is not the default. The default is serving Jesus with your life, and God gives some gifts. God gives gifts to his people, and Paul identifies some of one kind and some of another. And marriage is a gift that God gives to some of his children as a way to serve him, but it's not the default. And so I think that adulthood equals marriage really fits in to that whole assumption that my value as a human depends on whether or not someone else is into me. That gets compounded with this Christian culture idea we have that I got to get married. Every auntie is at every family reunion is checking my hand for a ring, and anyone in your life, and all the pressure because that's what Christian young people do. That's when life starts, right? Is when you get married, and until then, it's kind of like, well, what? So, have you met anyone yet? You're at Bible college. Anyone's like, I've been here 2 days. Like, lay off, right? But this intense pressure leads to a lot of really terrible things. It leads to anxiety, right? It leads to a lot of sadness. It leads to a lot of settling. Let's talk about that for just a moment. Have any of you ever heard the phrase or the word or the acronym BGIS before? Okay, so let me introduce you to this. It stands for best, and it depends if you're a guy or a girl. Say best girl or best guy in sight. And here's this idea. The idea is that if you think you must be married, then whatever circle you're in, you're going to be on the prowl for the best option in that circle. The best girl or the best guy in sight. And if you think that those are your only options, then you're going to very quickly zoom in on the best option and go for that best option, which may not actually be the best option for you, may not be a great relationship for you, may not be a best life partner, but you've got to get married and it's the best person in sight, so you go for it. And now, I don't want to, like, the best person in sight may be the best person, but it may not be, right? And this idea of, well, I've got to get married, I've got this many months left in this environment, and there's never going to be anybody else, and so I guess I got to settle for that person, has led many Christians into some really difficult marriages that they didn't have to get into. No one was forcing them at gunpoint, except all their aunties at Thanksgiving, right? But here's really one of the saddest things, that this intense pressure that you gotta find someone, this sense that my value depends on whether or not someone else is into me, one of the really sad effects and results of this is it harms our ability as Christian young people. Maybe you're saying, what do you mean our ability? You're not young, but I feel young, okay? I really feel like being 40, which I turned 40 this year, it's just the same as being 20, except you have to tweeze hair off the top of your ear. But other than that, I know that's gross and that's kind of the whole point. But like, other than that, it's the same, okay? One of the things that it really harms is our ability, or I could say your ability, to form healthy friendships with one another. Okay, so y'all know what I'm talking about here. If you're a guy and every girl is a potential partner, and you go into a room or you go into Bible college the first few days, you know, you're you're on the prowl, right? There's different phrases that get used. You're sharking is the one phrase. We used to have guys that would show up. I was a young adults pastor at a church in Regina, and we'd have guys showing up. And, guys would do this because they're just like hunting, looking around. And every girl is a potential spouse. And if a girl is not a potential marriage partner, then what? Fill in the blank. Girls, you can fill in the blank. She tends to be ignored, not worth your time, right? And girls, I could say the same for you, right? If every guy is a potential partner, then every single person is, the moment you meet them, is being put through these filters where you're thinking right away, could this be someone I could marry or not? Could this be someone I could date or not? And you're thinking that right away, putting everyone through those filters, and you're so set on getting to the right match that, it's kind of like our equivalent of swiping left or right on Tinder, except we don't use Tinder, but it's like that. It's like, nope. And people just get ignored and get left out of our lives because, well, they're not a potential partner or they are. It becomes the whole grid. Maybe some of you have no idea what I'm talking about and you're like, dude, this is crazy. Then great, just forget what I'm saying. But I don't think that's the case for a lot of you. Okay, I think you know what I'm talking about. Just to share personally here, I grew up in a home where my mom really prioritized marriage. She'd had a lot of terrible relationships, and so us finding a good spouse was like a huge priority. When I was a little boy, Wayne Watson released that song. Some of you older people are going to remember that, about the mom praying for her little boy's spouse somewhere in the world tonight. And the ladies would sing it at the evening service, and all the moms would cry and look down at their sons, and they would go home and pray for the little girl out there that my son's going to marry. And there's all this pressure, right? And I think my mom took that like way too far. Okay, so like I would be like 7 and we'd like meet some new people. Mom would be like, Chris, there'd be a girl you could marry someday. That she's from a good family. That's wife material there, Chris. And like from a very young age, okay? Not healthy. Just for the record, not healthy. I'm not saying it's wrong to pray for your kids' future spouses. If they're gonna be married, don't assume they will, but So I went in, well before I was a teenager, I went into my teenage years, like every girl was like, could it be you? Could it be you? Could it be you? Could it be you? Not helpful and not healthy, because it really hurt my ability to have friendships with my sisters in Christ. I remember the freedom that I felt when I got married to Amy. Well, there's two things that I experienced when I got married to Amy. One of them was the freedom I suddenly felt. There was a number of really quality young women that were her friends, that were in our life, that I suddenly felt the freedom to just act like a brother towards. How are you doing today? How was your week? Just to talk to them normally. That up till that point, I had felt like I couldn't do that because I had these very unhealthy whole models for relationships that I had. And it's, I wish that I hadn't waited that long to experience that. Because who said I had to wait that long to experience that, right? So that's part of what I want in the challenge here. The second thing, and I had been prepared for this, is, and so it didn't totally take me by surprise, but when you walk into every room on the lookout, is there someone here? Could it be them? Could it be them? Could it be them? Guess what? This does not make that go away. And I found myself for the first several months, if not years after getting married, still asking myself that question as I would go, or still subtly evaluating women on whether they were marriage material. I'd be like, wait a second. But we understand now these ideas of neural pathways and neuroplasticity, and you think a certain way for years and years and years and years and years, and it just doesn't go away. And so it was a real challenge to get my head wrapped around the fact that, no, like, I'm married and these are my sisters and it's okay. And
moving on from my own story here and some of the experiences we might have had, where might we find some biblical guidance for what I'm talking about here? And what I want to suggest, and I don't know if you have your Bible, I hope you do, 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, contains, and verse 2 in particular, contains some really, really crucial truth on relationships with the opposite sex, whether we're married or not. Can someone read those two verses? Someone read them nice and loud for us, 1 Timothy 5, 1 and 2. So for the record, I'm not the older man that is talking about. Mitch, you can rebuke me like a brother, just for the record, okay? We're zooming in particular. Well, let's before we talk about zooming in, okay? So Timothy, he's a young man. We don't know exactly how young he was, 20s, might have been his 30s. And the Apostle Paul is giving him instructions on how to relate to people in his church. And so he says, don't rebuke an older man, like don't go after an older man like he is your peer, but encourage him as you would a father. And younger men, how are you supposed to treat them? Treat them as brothers. Older women, treat them as mothers. Younger women as sisters in all purity. So what's the basic idea here? This is really simple, but it's helpful to think through. We've got fathers, mothers, brothers, and sisters. What do you call that? Yeah. So, Timothy, treat these people in your church like they're your family. And the fact that Timothy was the pastor in the church didn't change this. He was to treat them like he was their family. And so that was the grid through which he was to put his relationships. What's an appropriate way to treat this person? Like, if he's an older man, like a father, an older woman, like a mother, a younger man, like a brother, which means I'm allowed to wrestle with them or whatever, I don't know, and younger women as sisters in all purity. So this is a really key verse for dating couples when it comes to the issue of physical boundaries. And often when I'm instructing on, or when I'm teaching on dating, we go to this verse because a lot of Christians are clueless when it comes to what's okay and what's not okay when we're dating, and there's all kinds of stupid rules that Christians have given and passed on, and the basic idea is that there is something a little bit magic about this ring, is until that you're married and you've put the ring on each other's hands, what's the basic category of relationship that you are in as a young Christian man and a young Christian woman? Until you're married, the basic category of relationship you're in is brother and sister. So how are you to treat each other? As brother and sister, what is appropriate between you physically? What would be appropriate between a brother and sister? Which does not mean punching, okay? No punching. I'm sure that's in there. It's probably in the NLT or something, without punching. Okay, so this is really important. And this verse just gives clarity. It gave a lot of clarity as Amy and I were dating on what's appropriate. Are there appropriate ways of showing physical affection? And you think in the terms of brother and sister, it's really, really helpful. But here's what this means when you're not dating. Before that point. Okay, so guys in the room, look around for a moment. Look around at the girls in the room. You're allowed, okay? Look at them. These are your sisters. Gals, look around at the guys in the room. These are your brothers. What does it mean that you are sisters and brothers of one another? It means that these are not just potential marriage partners. These are fellow members of the family of God with you. These are your brothers and sisters, many of whom you will not marry, but all of whom get to be your brothers or sisters, fellow members in the family of God. So you see how this is really a shift, because if you're a guy and you're looking at every girl like potential marriage partner or not, you're going to miss out on so much. You're going to miss out on so much possibility to live life with sisters in Christ. And I can say vice versa for you gals. It's the same the other way around. Now, of course, we understand that there are differences. Like, I am, of course, closer to my real sister, Angela. I don't know if you all know that Angela's my sister. So if you see her punching me, that's why. But I, of course, have a closeness and an ability to relate to her in a way that I wouldn't assume would be the case. Like, so for example, I could just show up at Angela's house and be like, hey, can you serve me something to eat? I wouldn't do that to any other woman here in the room, right? I mean, I'm sure I could show up at your house and say, hey, can I have something to eat? But that's because, you know, like we got like a mother thing going on. So of course, I there's some common sense that applies here. There are things that I can do with my actual sisters that I wouldn't do with someone who wasn't my actual sister. So I get that. There's some wisdom here. But in general, there is a whole lot more, I think, that we can enjoy with our relationships as brothers and sisters than we often do. So would I encourage you as guys and girls to, for example, spend lots of exclusive one-on-one time with one guy and one girl and go on long drives and walks and be like, oh, no, we're just brother and sister. It's like, no, okay, that's what I'm saying. Of course, there's some common sense here. But for like, you know, to like walk up to someone in the lunch line and say, hey, what are you going to do on your break? Are you allowed to do that? Without them thinking, I wonder if he likes me. Like, okay. Yes, say it together. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You are allowed to do that. Are you allowed to say, hey, a few of us are going to Tim Hortons and we're just going to get some coffees and talk about what we've been learning from the Lord so far this semester. You want to come with us? Are you allowed to do that without that person thinking, I wonder who likes me in that group? Yes, you are, because you're brothers and sisters. See how freeing that is? And you just be like, you can just say, it's okay to just act like brothers and sisters with each other. We don't have to play the who likes who, I wonder what's going on game. We can just enjoy one another and enjoy friendships with one another. And I mentioned the group thing because often that's a much safer environment to enjoy some of these things. Can we agree together? Okay, so let's, and you guys have to agree to this. I can't make this happen for you. But wouldn't it be great to have just a house rule that said, ladies, just because he was nice to you doesn't mean that he's into you. It just means that he's acting like your brother. Okay, guys, just because she's nice to you doesn't mean she's into you. It just means she's acting like your sister. And that's okay. That's okay. It's not just okay. It's really good. It's really good because it just opens up a whole lot more brother-sister fellowship and relationship. It means that we can make friends and receive Christian encouragement from a whole group of people we'd be cut off from otherwise. It means we actually learn about people. Here's another really important part. So that if you are going to pursue someone as more than a friend at some point, that you might have a really good basis in place of knowing them as a friend, but through these group kinds of settings. See, here's what sadly happens so much of the time is if it's basically we're romantically interested or nothing at all, then you don't really know people. You don't build friendships. You don't spend time in normal settings with people. And then the only way that you then step out of that is when you like someone. And then it's romantic interest that is the basis for you going out of your way to get to know them because I like them. Guys, here's something that is going to be hard for you to hear, but it's true. Liking someone is a really fickle reason for building a relationship with someone. Romantic feelings are not sufficient grounds for a good and a solid relationship. You can have romantic feelings for someone that you shouldn't. You cannot have romantic feelings for someone that you should. You can have romantic feelings for someone one day and not the next day. That's called marriage, by the way. And it can go all over the place. And so that's why if it's like Like you, by now, most of you should know this. You can get crushes on people that you look back and you're like, what in the world was I thinking? And so if basically your rule is, I don't talk to people until I like them, and then I like them and talk, well, liking them, that's not a great reason. So start, that's the great thing about friendships and getting to know each other as brothers and sisters. Then if you're going to get interested in someone, you actually have a good reason for why you might be interested in them, because you know more about them than just that, well, they're kind of cute and they smiled at me across the room, which means they're clearly into me and they like my post. So like, we're going to get married in 6 weeks. Okay. It's just so much better than that. Attraction is not bad, but it's insufficient. It's not enough on its own. You need more. And so building friendships allows you to do that. Now, here's the key question. We're going to run out of time here very soon. So this is where I'm going to tell you, if you want to know more about any of this kind of stuff, or you want to hear times where I've spent a little bit more time, we have a ton of material on dating and stuff like that on our church's website. If you go to ebcnipwin.ca, just go to the search bar, type in dating. We've done workshops. I've done different chapels here, and there's a whole bunch. So lots of things I'm not going to get to today, but if you want to pop it in the speaker on your car as you drive home for the break, there's a ton there. But let's just talk about this here. If it's true that being nice to each other is not just bad, but normal and good, and that just because they smiled and asked how your break was doesn't mean they're flirting with you. Okay, so if all that's true, then how do you know when you're going to be, when it's going beyond that? And here's the answer. Guys, you grow the heck up and you tell them what your intentions are. It's on you as guys to lead and initiate, and when it's appropriate, to forthrightly tell a girl what your interest level is and what your intentions are. John Ensor, in his book, Doing Things Right in Matters of the Heart, which is a great little book on relationships we have in our church library, he said, I was speaking with a small circle of college students, Christian brothers in their mid-20s mostly. One of them expressed the problem squarely. Quote, I don't like to ask until I see all the right signals that she is going to say yes, end quote. Okay, no show of hands, but any guys sympathize with that? Well, you know, like, you don't just ask. You, like, put out all the feelers and then you make sure it's really safe, okay? John Ensor says, my response, coward, you are the man. Okay. Brendan Anderson, in an article that he wrote many years ago, said, the intentional man repeatedly and constantly goes first and takes on all the risks of rejection. He always lets the girl know where he stands so she feels secure and isn't left guessing. On the other hand, don't weird her out by talking about marriage on the first date. Okay. So he gives some examples here. Approaching her initially. An intentional man says, I'd like to take you out on a date. Unintentional, want to hang out sometime? My roommates are all gone this weekend. Intentional, I had a great time tonight and would definitely want to do this again. I will give you a call this week. Unintentional, I'll call you sometime. Intentional, I think you are a godly, beautiful woman and I have a great time with you. I would like to pursue a relationship with you. Unintentional, so what do you think about us? Or, I'm not sure where I stand. What about you? Things look like they could go well for a long time. Intentional man says, I don't date for the sake of dating, and marriage is a long ways away, but I couldn't be happier with how things are going. I think you're amazing. Unintentional. Things are going okay, I guess. We'll see. Recognizing the end of a relationship. Intentional. I am sorry, but I don't see this progressing past friendship. Unintentional. Time passing, cold shoulder, you stop calling. And I'm just going to finish up reading this quote here. Ultimately, the unintentional guy's responses are selfish because they put his interests before the woman's, and they're moreover cowardly because he avoids addressing where the relationship is, leaving the woman marooned in relationship limbo. The man in the relationship should always have an answer for three questions. What is this relationship? What are your intentions? How are you demonstrating those intentions right now? The big idea is this, men. Don't keep her guessing. Let her know exactly where you are at all of the time. It is a risk, of course, but better on you than on her. Own it. So I read these words at a talk very similar to this a few years ago in this exact spot, and I was very surprised at the response. Here's what I was hoping for. I was hoping that the guys in the room would hear that and go, wow, okay, that seems big and scary, but let's do it. Instead, the feedback that I heard, of course I didn't hear it directly, but the feedback that I heard was, that's unrealistic. And I heard that from the girls, actually, that the guys had said that to them. And I was very soundly criticized. So I just want to say a couple things here. Brothers, I get it that asking a girl out in the way that we've just described there is not just hard, but one of the hardest things that you'll ever do in your life. Like, and so just like, ladies, if he's having a hard time with it, have just like a little bit of mercy on him, because it's like really, 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 really hard. Like not sleeping for a week beforehand, kind of hard. Okay. So like really, really hard. But that kind of anxiety and tension is unavoidable. And so brothers, it's up to you to own it, because that's what godly men do. That's because that's what godly husbands do. They lay down their lives for their wives as Christ loved the church. It's sacrificial. And so you need to carry that load as much as possible instead of her, because that's what marriage is about carrying the heavy load for her sake, carrying your cross for her sake. So brothers, if you're not ready to carry the load of initiating and clarifying a relationship, are you ready to carry the load of laying your life down for her in marriage? Ladies, do you want a husband to lead you in marriage? Do you want a husband to lay his life down for you and sacrificially lead you in marriage? The way that you find that kind of a guy is not by making it as easy on him as possible and wearing the pants in the relationship and flirting and passing all the signals so he just goes with the flow, and then you just imagine that he's going to put this ring on and instantly become a mature, wise, godly, initiating man. It doesn't work that way. It's got to start right at the beginning. You need to look for a guy to be willing, and he's going to stumble. It's going to be hard. Don't expect a guy at 20 to be who a guy is going to be when he's 50. But he needs to show some willingness to initiate and to carry on his shoulders the load of responsibility for leading in the relationship. Marriage, and I know we got to sew up here really, really quick. So let me just try to finish this up very quickly here. Marriage is not a sex license. Okay, I think that's how many young Christian people think is, hey, I like you and you like me and we like hanging out. But let's get married so we're allowed to have sex. And that's kind of where it stops. That's not what marriage is. Marriage is, if for those of you who the Lord will give the gift of marriage to, marriage is, will be, probably the hardest thing that you'll have ever done. Marriage is not about we get to do whatever we want now. Marriage, so brothers, I want to talk to you. Marriage is about counseling your wife through her first miscarriage. Marriage is about holding your wife's hand in the hospital after she just found out that her dad got diagnosed with cancer. Marriage is about walking her through her temptations and struggles and leading her to Christ again and again. Marriage is about putting your own selfish desires to death time and time and time again. And so, brothers, if you're not ready to act like a man and risk rejection and forthrightly ask a girl on a date, leave it to yes or no, then you're not yet ready for marriage. Now, that's not a condemnation. It just means, okay, so don't be a failure and you're never going to be ready and I'm just, Chris is so mean. No, it means get ready. Do some hard things. Work out your initiation muscles. Work out your do hard things muscles. Work out your I'm okay with rejection because my value is found in the Lord and not you muscles. Work those things out. Press in close to Jesus, do hard things, because you're going to need to do hard things. There are some costs to being forthright. There were at least three girls that I asked out before I met Amy, whom I was forthright with. I had also played the flirting game, and that had some costs. One girl, I forthrightly asked her out, freaked her out, never heard from her again. Another girl, I asked her out. She said, you know what? I'm not interested in a relationship right now. I said, okay. A few months later, she changed her mind and came back around in a very respectful way to let me know that. But by then, I had moved on, and it was all cool. Third girl said, you know what? I actually have another guy who's asked me the same thing, and I've known him for years, way longer than you, and I'm probably going to say yes to him first. I felt pretty stupid. A few weeks later, she texted me or emailed me and said, yeah, I'm dating this other guy now, and I felt like a total idiot, except that she then introduced me to that guy, and he became one of my best friends, was one of the groomsmen at my wedding, and we're like really great family friends now, like our two families. So it's okay, guys. It's okay. It's going to be okay. And then the fourth girl said, I have no idea who you are because I've had a crush on another guy this whole time and haven't been paying attention to you. And that's not what she said, but that was the case. But she said, you know what? I'm willing to get to know you slowly. And we have three kids together now. And she's my first wife and my only wife. So big ideas from today, guys. Your value doesn't depend on whether another human's romantically interested in you or not, but that your heavenly Father is eternally committed to you. That's where your value's based on. Treating every guy or girl as a potential spouse is not the best way of treating them. Think of them mostly, primarily, as a brother or sister in the Lord. And then when you do move beyond that, if and when you move beyond that, brothers, you got to take on yourselves the responsibility to be clear and to initiate and to carry the risk on yourself, on your shoulders, because that is the best way that you can prepare for marriage and be the man that God's called you to be. There's so much more to say. We got to wrap it up here. I've already gone over time. I'm sorry. Let's pray. God, thank you for giving this group of young people the gift of each other, brothers and sisters in the Lord. Help them to treat one another as brothers and sisters in all purity, but as fellow members of your family. For those whom you will lead to marriage, would you help them to do that in the best and the most honorable and the most godly way possible? For those whom you will not, would you help them to invest everything you have given them for you in whatever seasons are ahead of them for however long they last? Would you, God, receive all the glory from all of this? Thank you that though another human may not show us the time of day, you have showed us eternity and given us eternity. And we so look forward to an eternity of kindness that has already started today. So may we live in that light. And I pray this, Jesus, in your name. Amen.